You're listening to the Arctic Circle podcast. In this episode, we listen to a dialogue between five leaders of Indigenous organizations discussing the role of Indigenous peoples in global solutions. Opening remarks are provided by Sarah Olswick, International Chair of the Inuit Circumpolar Council. Joining her in the panel are Edward Alexander, Director and Co-Chair of the Gwich'in Council International, Chief Bill Erasmus from the Arctic Athabascan Council, Jessica Veldstra, Executive Director of Aleut International Association, and Tanya Johansson from the Sami Council. The panel is moderated by Ólafur Ragnar Grímsson, Chairman of Arctic Circle and former President of Iceland. This event originally took place at the 2023 Arctic Circle Assembly.
Chairman Grímsson, Excellences, Ministers, ladies and gentlemen, it is my great honor to speak on behalf of the Inuit Circumpolar Council at this year's Arctic Circle Assembly once again. It's good to see you all. Thank you for being here. Not least, it is my great honor to join this esteemed panel of Arctic Indigenous leaders who, like the Inuit Circumpolar Council, have influenced and led Arctic governance and policymaking for decades. Our organizations are permanent participants to the Arctic Council, which we co-founded in 1996. The Arctic Council brings together the 8 Arctic states and 6 Indigenous peoples organizations in a unique governance structure, a governance structure we must protect and further develop. As we have stated before, there is no Arctic Council without Arctic Indigenous peoples. I want to bring a clear message to this assembly. Times are difficult. Nothing is business as usual. But the Arctic Council is intact. And it should remain intact. No one has left the table. Following its rules of procedures, the Arctic Council is reactivating. And I want to commend the Norwegian Arctic Council chairship for steering through the rough waters with the aim of continued people-to-people and cross-border collaboration. We look forward to supporting and partnering in the preparations of the incoming Greenlandic, Danish and Faroese chairship under the Kingdom of Denmark within the next couple of years. Arctic Indigenous peoples are the original inhabitants of our region, and we bear with us a deeply rooted spiritual, cultural, and all kinds of connection to the nature around us. We have safeguarded our nature, our ways of lives, and continue to develop our own futures through participating on the national, regional, and international arena. Already in 1973, Arctic Indigenous peoples met for the first time, and from then we have stood shoulder by shoulder. In 1973, our representatives called for the establishment of a circumpolar body of collaboration. And the Arctic Council is just one of many examples of how Arctic Indigenous peoples influence and achieve invaluable milestones through building international relations. This summer, representatives of the 5 organizations present on the stage here today met in Ilulissat Kalaallit Nunaat, where we commemorated the first Arctic Peoples Conference, a 50th anniversary of our collaboration. Here we celebrated our original foresight and unity. Above all, we reaffirmed our inherent right of self-determination as distinct peoples through a joint statement highlighting our interdependent, interrelated, interconnected, and indivisible rights, including our right to self-determination as the prerequisite for the exercise and enjoyment of all our human rights. We invite you all to read the 2023 Arctic Peoples Conference Joint Statement. And a few weeks ago, we gathered again in Sápmi in Norway, this time to prepare for the upcoming UNFCCC COP28. Climate change continues to be the biggest threat to our existence and well-being as peoples. Last year, I invited all assembly participants to feel the strength on an individual basis and a collective basis to act on climate change. Dear friends, the 1.5 degrees Celsius so-called target should not be seen as a target, but as the edge beyond which we will reach a point of no return, of the coastal erosion that is eating away our communities, the wildfires diminishing our lands, and the melting of permafrost swallowing our infrastructure, and not least the ice on which we depend and how it disappears. At the upcoming COP, just transition and climate justice, as well as climate finance, will dominate the agendas. So, Excellences, this year, I challenge all to reflect on the concept of justice. We must ask ourselves, justice for whom? I want to paraphrase the words of the youth delegates, 15 youth delegates that participated in this year's Arctic Peoples Conference, when they stated that there can be no actions taken in the name of a greater good if it violates the human rights of indigenous peoples. So in conclusion, I call on all of us to join forces and make sure that this upcoming COP28 will be clear on inclusion of a human rights approach also in its outcome document. A step back taken last year when the wording on human rights was taken out of the outcome document. So, dear friends, we have a lot to talk about, and I look forward to our panel. And we will hold a session on Saturday morning where we will show more nice pictures from 73, but also talk more in depth about the achievements of our organizations representing our peoples throughout 50 years of collaboration. Bojana.
Thank you, Sarah. I think it's visibly displayed here on the wall that the name Arctic Circle, so far as we are concerned, is a play on words, because it's primarily a circle of people, not a geographical area. That's the symbol of how we present the organization. So let me follow your introduction by asking the other panelists here to try to summarize briefly what would be your core message to COP28 or to this gathering in terms of the indigenous concerns. Can we start with you?
Yeah, I think for us it's quite important to remind everyone that the Arctic is our home. It's not an empty space where people can come and collect the minerals for the green shift. It is actually our home. And whatever you do in the Arctic impacts us as a people, it impacts our families, and it impacts us as individuals. So I just want to remind everyone that the Arctic is our home.
Thank you, Tanya. That I would second that. You know, our way of life is intricately connected to the land and the oceans and the air, and having all of those clean and healthy result in a healthy environment for us to thrive.
Well, thank you, President Grimson. Well, that's quite a loud microphone I got here. Well, thank you, Sarah, for your opening introduction. You know, Gwich'in Council International really wanted to center our discussions at the Arctic Council on our homeland and homelands like ours that often get overlooked in Arctic affairs. And so we're not a marine people, unlike everyone else at the Arctic Council. And so when we thought about the Arctic Council and events like Arctic Circle, most of the discussions take place around the blue economy. They take place around shipping, We wanted to recenter that discussion to the things that we were seeing, which was widespread wildland fire, the boreal forest that we live in, the destruction of that boreal forest, and then what that means in the broader sense, the broader impacts for not only the circumpolar Arctic, but for the globe as a whole. So simple messages like, you know, the boreal forest contains as much carbon as the collective atmosphere of planet Earth. The permafrost contains twice that amount. We're seeing wide-scale landscape-type changes. Certainly, these things need to be included in national inventories. The emissions we saw in Canada this year, the emissions that we see in Russia several years ago, in the ICPP or ICCP projections and emissions. And we just need a lot more circumpolar collaboration and cooperation on wildland fire. And of course, we're delighted to be a part of elevating that issue at the Arctic Council, here at Arctic Circle, and then again tonight at the reception with the Norwegian chairship of the Arctic Council. And so I think that's the main takeaway, is that the Arctic is more than sea ice, and it's more than the ocean. It's the peoples in the forest, too, and that's the largest forest on planet Earth.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for this opportunity, and thank you to Sarah for your opening comments. We're part of the Arctic Athabaskan Council, which are the Dene people in the Northwest Territories, Yukon, and Alaska. And what worries us is that it was very evident at the Paris COP meeting, which many of us were at, when wording was taken out of the agreement a number of times associated with our peoples. We had to lobby. I think five times the wording was taken out, then we had to put it back in over a period of 2 weeks. And the big takeaway is that there are people in the world that actually believe that we don't have rights that are different than theirs. And in fact, they are human rights, which Sarah alluded to. And on top of that, there are people that don't believe that the climate is changing, and they won't even use that word. So we have a lot of work to do, and we're glad that there's opportunities like this where we could talk amongst ourselves and share and look forward to a reality where our children and our grandchildren can have a safe future, because right now they're not confident in what's ahead. And, you know, I might add, and I hope people don't take this the wrong way, but we have to say the things that need to be said. We're caribou people where I come from. And in Norway, the Sami people are reindeer people. And they won a court case 2 years ago because their reindeer were being affected by the development of windmills being developed in their area. And the Supreme Court of Norway supported their claim and made the decision that the licenses to build the windmills were invalid. However, 2 years later, the windmills are still operating. So we've contributed a lot over the world over the years in terms of judicial movement. In our area, we had the Paulette case, which transformed into land claims being settled because we proved we have treaty and Aboriginal rights. This is a landmark decision. It needs to be recognized. It needs to be implemented because it affects all of us, and it affects all of the people out in the audience. So those are things that we're really concerned about, and if we can make the difference by talking about it and sharing our ideas, then we're quite pleased to do that. Thank you.
So you really have the feeling that you are not being listened to. I mean, if I asked you that question, I mean, is the answer yes or no or maybe or...
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Well, for us,
yeah.
Currently, yes, we feel like we... When we, for instance, the court case that was brought up here, we have our youth are choosing education based on what their family needs, not what they themselves want. Our youth are studying law because that is where we are needed to be in the court cases. And when we study the majority society's own rules and we win by their rules, we are still not listened to. So no, right now, we don't feel like it.
No, but that's why I think, as we heard the upcoming president of COP28 say in his speech here earlier today, that it is one of the pillars of the UAE approach to the presidency of COP28, to give the indigenous communities, not just in the Arctic, but in Africa, Asia, Latin America, elsewhere, a constructive role in seeking solutions. So I think you need to take them at their word.
You will hold them accountable.
Yeah, exactly. So that is also a challenge for not only you, but also indigenous communities elsewhere. And how we can facilitate that there is this common, I know there's a diverse voices of indigenous, but how there is a common voice. Yeah.
Well, I think that the UNFCCC framework is actually a good example of how decades of work of our organizations together with the six other socio-cultural regions of the world's indigenous peoples that work under the UN have succeeded to build a platform that is recognized and established by the UN. Because under the UNFCCC platform framework, we have the local communities and indigenous peoples platform. Now, we don't really super like the local communities part of it, and that was part of the negotiations, and Chief Bill can tell you more about that. But the fact that we have this platform makes it a formal UN process for us to prepare for the COPs. So when we come to the COP28 and we hold the presidency accountable to their promise of providing indigenous peoples a platform at the COP, we will be extremely well prepared. And that is also what we mentioned about the Arctic regional gathering taking place a few weeks ago in Norway, in Sápmi. Like the Arctic regional gathering, there has been gatherings of all of the other regions as well. And we meet a week before the COP actually starts, in the facilitative working group of the indigenous peoples. And here we then gather with all other indigenous peoples of the world to bring our message as clear as possible to the negotiations. So we are just by the door of the negotiations, but because we are not recognized as equal to the state parties, we are not there at the table. So if they want to listen to us, we have very, very clear messages.
Well, I think the Arctic Circle is a demonstration. You don't necessarily need a table. You can't maneuver your way in. And then you will be listened to. And you can create alliances and cooperation. And I think the fact that how Dr. Sutherland-Jupere spoke here, and also the message that Mariam delivered here from the States, is a genuine message from the first generation in the desert, in the UAE, which was not brought up in the Bedouin tents. And when you start working with them, you realize that the tradition of the desert, the tradition of the Bedouin tent, is still very much alive. But from that point of view, they are indigenous. We don't look at them that way, but they are. The more you start working with them, they are. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the real citizens of Abu Dhabi, they are fewer than us in Iceland. They are fewer than us in Iceland. So I think this is the first time in the history of COP that the leadership of COP is the hand of a country which basically is run by indigenous people, although we don't officially classify those who have came out from the desert. And the Bedouin, and Sheikh Zayed was the founder of the United Arab Emirates 50 years ago or so, was mentioned here on the stage before. He had to bring people from the desert in order to start working to cultivate the sand. And the success that they have achieved, I think, is a message that there are no boundaries, in a way. And we should remember, because it was said before, that nature-based solutions have to be a part of the what comes out of COP. About 25% of the Earth's territories is in one way or another under the control of indigenous communities. That's a huge, huge part. So let us see if there are some questions. We need the lights up so we can see where people put up their hands. Okay, are there? Yes. Okay, let's have the microphone there.
Thank you very much, Leif Lundman from Denmark. Sarah, I noticed with satisfaction that you emphasized the need for people-to-people cross-border cooperation. In that connection, I would like to hear about how you are doing progress within the ICC and within the permanent participants of the Arctic Council when it comes to the cooperation with the Russian Association of Indigenous Peoples of the North. Are you suffering from the full-scale sanctions?
Well, as I said in my remarks, the Arctic Council is intact. This also means that we have had meetings, including the Russian Indigenous Peoples Association. Recently in Norway, we met formally with the senior Arctic officials chair, the Norwegian chair, and all of the six Indigenous Peoples Organizations were there. So this is a testament to the Arctic Council functioning still, and the indigenous peoples being there, doing the work.
Okay, is there one more question here from the audience? Well, you already had a question before, so let's see. Yes, there's one there, yes.
I'm so sorry, I had a question too, I apologize. Rocky Weitz, I'm from the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy. I direct the Maritime Studies Program. And I've had the real luck to have a number of Arctic Indigenous students over the last 2 years, and they've been some of my best students. And my question is, how can those of us in universities around the world help you? Because we want to help, but we need to listen to you to know what to do.
So they're pointing to you.
Yes, I'll address that. Thank you for that question. I think one way that it's very valuable to Indigenous peoples is to work with us, to start in the very beginning with those of us in the regions when you're looking at research and project proposals, that we're at the table from the very beginning.
I think creating opportunities is a big part of it too, right? You know, there's a lot of folks that sit around and say, well, we want Indigenous people at the table. We want to work with Indigenous people. But then they never provide the opportunity to sit with folks at that table. And, you know, I see my friends from Singapore nodding, and I appreciate them because not only do they have the rhetoric of we should support Indigenous people, they've come to Gwich'in Council International and said, you know, we have scholarships for your people. Please bring them to Singapore. Let's learn from them. Let's teach each other about our different cultures and so forth. And so, you know, those types of opportunities are actually true and appreciated.
Yeah.
Thank you for the question. There are a lot of gaps that are out there, as you know. And I know when I was looking at doing a thesis, I had to find something that could contribute to the world. Just a point that we brought up with the court case. Get someone to study that. Someone with a bit of a legal background, anthropology background, economics, whatever, but the ability to do research and analyze when the Supreme Court makes a decision, what happens? What are the next steps? And why is it that the Sami case is different from others and it's not being enacted? That's where you can really contribute. And then put that out into the academic world so people can read it and people can, other judges can see it. And so when a judge, for example, sees that one court case is not being enacted upon, then they may render the decision a little different so that it is the next time.
Well, thank you very much. Unfortunately, our time is over. We are a number of minutes over our allotted time. Thank you very much for your contribution. It's an important message.